You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast with me, Rachel McCathy. With publishers continuing to develop and hone their digital strategy, this week's podcast will look specifically at the impact of new media on video journalism. I speak to experts in the field from across the industry about the opportunities available for video news on digital platforms. They also share examples of what approaches to online video seem to be working for local, niche, national and international media, and share some of the lessons learned so far about audience behaviour and expectation in digital environments. So what seems to be working for different publishers in terms of style, format and type of video? Here's John Domikos, who's a video producer for The Guardian, on where he's seen online video work well.
We've done a lot of discussion here at The Guardian recently about how online video, how the video angle fits into our sort of wider coverage of events. And there is a general feeling, although not everyone shares it, that rather than telling fully formed stories in videos, if it was TV, news or documentary, what we need to do is sort of package stuff up so that, you know, maybe contextual and factual things might go more into articles or blogs, whereas the video contains the powerful bit of footage, the artifact, you might call it, or the key interview, either from a whistleblower or from a victim of something, or from the human interest interview. So a really strong bit of footage that kind of backs up and verifies and brings to life a story that you might also be telling in other ways in text.
In the local press, online video has also been an effective traffic driver. Andy Dickinson, senior lecturer in online journalism at the University of Central Lancashire, tells me. Similarly, he identifies the key video snippets, which tell the captivating part of a story in a dynamic way, is also the content which seems to work best.
I think where it's worked for them is in driving traffic. It's worked for them as a different way, a different kind of content on their website that will attract a certain kind of user. So the kind of video that tends to work, particularly on local websites, although you could say this is a general point, is the kind of viral clip video. So it's not the package stuff. It's not the stuff where they've taken time to script it and, you know, it's got cutaways, the stuff that would look more like a traditional broadcast package, although there's some, you know, there's stuff like that exists and it's done as broadcast does it. In sometimes it's done well, sometimes it's done badly. But it's those little snippets, the bits of CCTV, the bit of video that was snatched at a scene either by a member of the public or invariably by a journalist with a mobile phone or some kind of lo-fi recorder. It's that stuff that drives traffic. From a broader online content perspective, I think it's stuff that makes best use of the diversity of online storytelling. You know, when you need to see something moving, when you need that dynamic storytelling that video gives you, that visceral, some, you know, here we are in a situation and suddenly something happens, or the build up to a story, they have that in their palette of storytelling tools. So what's really nice to see is the move away from the requirement to use video to the point where video is being used when it works best. So that's where I see a lot of the value of video these days, and that's where I see it being used well. People are being more selective about it when it suits the story, rather than just saying we've got this space on our website where a video clip must be. How the hell do we fill that?
And for niche and specialist publishers, short snippets of online video which offer unique insight into the related industry is a good opportunity to build engaged communities across different verticals, says founder and chief executive of Beat.tv, Andy Plesser.
Well, the large broadcasters have to play to a bigger global field. By the same token, they have the opportunity to be much more vertical than they have in the past. But for me, as a niche publisher, I'm very focused on delivering highly informational content and access to people who are interested in online video and digital media in a broader sense. And I think that sort of approach of getting, you know, contextual, fairly simply edited 2 to 5 minute clips about industry insiders in a particular industry and people who generally are not seen on television, I think it's a very good sort of proposition for other verticals.
So is there a need for publishers to always bring something new to the table when it comes to online video, particularly for newspapers, but also for broadcasters, which breaks past conventions? Here's Marek Prusiewicz, editor of the BBC's global video team, discussing this point.
I know that a lot of people have believed for an awfully long time that video online is different. I really don't believe that. I've never believed that. I think good video is good video. And the treatments might be different, but you will find that the kind of stories that engage audiences on television, if you look at the engagement figures that the BBC picks up for its audiences pretty regularly on stories, I bet you the correlation between those and the stories that do best online is a pretty strong one.
And Andy Dickinson also offered his thoughts on this.
Actually, what they need to do is look at what, in general, at what people are consuming and say, well, you know, what do we need to reinvent the wheel? And I think from a news point of view, I don't think they necessarily do. You know, if you know, a reasonably well-framed medium close-up with a bit of interview footage works, then why do anything different? I think there is a side to that which says, well, actually the form is changing because of the technology that we're using. So, you know, a medium close-up of somebody is really easy to do if you've got a tripod and a camera on the tripod and you've got a camera person and a reporter. If what you've got is a mobile phone and one person, then the medium close-up is really hard to do. It's a really hard to, you'd have to stand with one arm out with the mobile phone and at funny angles and stuff like that. So we're seeing a change in the form where people are more, talking more directly to the camera, which broadcasters would balk at still, I think. But that's not through design or anything like that. That's probably more through necessity. So it would be one of those things where I would say to newspaper people, now don't sweat it. If what works best for you is producing what looks like broadcast, then that's absolutely fine. In terms, moving on from that though, in terms of an opportunity to subvert it, I think there are people who are taking opportunities to subvert it because they now have a platform to be able to do that. You know, you couldn't be a video journalist who was interested in deconstructing the form of TV news and making it more graphics driven, you know, really working the surface of it as well as the production process of it and really challenging that workflow. You could be that, but you probably would have been termed a video artist rather than a video journalist. Now we've got video, now we've got the web which can handle the kind of video that those people are producing at the quality that they're producing. We're happily calling that video journalism. And you can see, I think if you look at that, you can see a separate development trend of that. You know, look at MediaStorm and look at those kind of nascent online video journalism platforms, and you see a different kind of journalism happening there that's different from the mainstream use of video on news websites and broadcasters. To some extent, that's a little bit more interesting, but I think it's something different.
A challenge for publishers identified by Beat.tv's Andy Plesser is how to build up a steady volume of video content. He explains the challenge.
You know, the issue that they're grappling with is how to, create more content to, sell ads around, certainly, and to build an audience through a sort of a more scalable, growing business, particularly with generally smaller staffs, of course, than broadcast news operations would have. So there's different scenarios that are emerging. One interesting and I think successful approach is what the Wall Street Journal is doing by producing 5 and more hours a day of linear live programming. I should say live webcasts from their studios in New York, Washington, and Hong Kong. And they then take those shows, if you will, and chop them up into clips, on-demand clips of 2 to 3 minutes. So it's a good way to produce more content and also engage an audience through this live video. So I think the creation of live and sort of editing that, repurposing it as clips for on-demand is valuable. I think that a lot of publishers are still struggling with what the form factor is of video, what the role of the reporter is. And I think that sometimes, I think a lot of the strategy, editorial strategy, is still very early stages. And I think that certain publications try to put their reporters or editors kind of speaking to the camera, reading a teleprompter, and it's not always successful. I think a more casual approach, a more spontaneous approach as so-called journalists, as presenters, you know, is better.
But as well as challenges, there are significant opportunities when it comes to online video. For one, the engagement of the community. At The Guardian, for example, video projects have engaged with the users and helped build participatory communities around content. Domokos explains more.
There are several ways in which video engages with our community, and we use it to engage. I do a series with a journalist called John Harris, where each month, it's a once-a-month film where we crowdsource both ideas and actual characters through blogging about it in advance. So we, you know, we were doing a film for next week on the class of 2012, students graduating. So we put a blog up and, you know, engage with people who want to actually be part of the film. We ended up going down to Sussex University in Brighton to interview, you know, to make two key characters, people who got in touch with us on the blog about that film. Another thing we can do is obviously UGC, user-generated content, which is getting readers to send in their own video footage. However, that has mixed results, I would say. You know, sometimes we just put a blanket call out, send us your videos of, you know, the day of protest or whatever, and you actually tend to not get that great material from doing that. Probably the best example of a focused engagement on that was when we did a video called the DLA Diaries, DLA Disability Living Allowance, which is under threat by government welfare reform. So we put a call out there saying, you know, are you receiving a disability living allowance? Do you want to take part in, you know, a video diary project where you tell us why it's important and show us what you use it for? And the response was kind of cautious at first, but, you know, you had to put time into kind of following up with tweets and explanations and explaining to people that what you're doing is going to be portrayed in a way that they're going to be happy with, gaining their trust. But once you put that groundwork in, the response was really incredible. We got eight separate videos back from people, which doesn't sound very much, but, you know, editing eight together, and all of them were very different in their own way, and editing them together made a really powerful film of, you know, of people from around Britain, different backgrounds, people that had come to us and who were really taking up the chance to sort of tell the story in their own words. It's also worth saying that, you know, you'd never get the kind of intimacy that you got from that you know, film if you went and filmed them as case studies, quote unquote, in the way that media, you know, typically works. You know, you it was a far more intimate and kind of human and personal story, and also the people themselves got back to us and said how that empowered they felt about taking part in the process like that. And we'll be following those up, I'm sure, as the reforms come through, and maybe getting back to the same people and getting them to do it.
And the increasing use of user-generated content has seen a shift in audience expectation or acceptance when it comes to online video quality, according to the BBC's Prashevich.
I don't think there are any really hard and fast rules about the quality of production, other than, and this is, you know, hugely generalising, the harder somewhere is to get to, the newsier the story, the more exclusive the footage, the more you're willing to put up with it being of slightly ropey quality. I think if you have got something that's extraordinary that nobody else has got, extraordinary story, from somewhere it's really hard to get footage, then you are more likely, I think, to tolerate that regardless of the quality. And, you know, that could be UGC, it could be something shot on a small camera by a producer in, you know, somewhere very remote from which it's very hard to feed. Are you willing to tolerate that kind of quality in a TV report shot in Manchester by a professional camera? No, of course you're not. And, you know, you shouldn't expect to. And there's no way your audience would. But the rise of UGC has again taught people to view video in slightly different ways. The immediacy of UGC means they are happy to live with the fact that the quality is not going to be as good as it's been professionally shot.
And The Guardian's John Domokos has more on this, such as the impact of YouTube.
It's not that people expect or are willing to accept lower quality overall. It's just that they will forgive lower technical quality if the content is compelling, if what's happening on screen is interesting, then they will forgive, you know, the technical quality of the shot. It doesn't mean that we set out to film things in a shoddy way. And, you know, certainly the video journalists here, like myself, still use kind of proper kits, and we try and film things as well as we can. But even myself, in some situations, I willingly sacrifice quality in order to blend in, or to have, you know, sort of, you know, sleight of foot in difficult situations, like the riots last year, for example. So I think, yeah, people obviously with, you know, YouTube and, you know, all sorts of video on the web, people are more willing to watch, you know, variable quality stuff. But the technical quality can vary, but the content has to be really good. If anything, they're more punishing, audiences are more punishing of poor content than they are in other visual media.
You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.